you pick up and you learn a lot. There's loads of different dynamics within changing rooms and different groups and people.
I didn't expect for us to qualify through three rounds of the Europa League. I found myself sitting over in Greece trying to submit an assignment an hour before our game against PAOK. Sponsors can see the power that sport has for communities all around the world and how it can unite together for certain causes.
Welcome to The Sit Down. This is the podcast that explores the mindsets, motivations, and opinions of elite athletes represented by Sport Endorse. Sport Endorse is a sports management agency specializing in endorsements and commercial partnerships with a number of organizations and sponsors. Our platform connects brands and athletes directly to engage and negotiate opportunities and ensure a line of communication between brand objectives and athlete values. The platform offers full transparency and ensures athletes have an authentic sponsorship experience. Whether you are an athlete seeking sponsorship or a brand seeking to work with elite talent, you can check us out through our webpage, www.platform.sportendorse.com, or download the mobile app. Today, I'm here with professional footballer Georgie Kelly. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So let's talk about your CV a bit. So you're from Donegal. You currently play for Rotherham. And last year, you were the leading scorer and the top player on your team. You also have a master's degree in environmental finance. So what inspired you to become a football player and pursue a higher education?
Yeah, initially, for me, it was education came first. Once I finished my secondary level, so it'll be high school, I think, in the States. Once I finished that level of education, my plan was always to go on to university. And at that stage, I had kind of very little, my aspirations for being a professional soccer player was kind of in the back of my mind. It was all college focused. I was always kind of driven to go and study. It just happened so that the university I picked to go and study at had a really good soccer team. And lo and behold, then after a year, I ended up getting a soccer scholarship there and progressed really quickly. That's UCD is the name of that college or that university. And they actually play in the professional divisions in Ireland. So kind of combining the two was a perfect fit for me there. It allowed me to play soccer at a really good level, which ended up, you know, allowing me to be kind of seen on a broader scale and a broader stage, which led to me getting, you know, progressing my soccer career. But then at the same time, it led me to getting, you know, at the same time, getting my degree as well. So it worked out really good for me.
Nice. That's very interesting. So I guess the education part was always, for me, always came first as well. But my university did not have that great of a football team. And I don't think I would have made it even if I tried. What were some of your favorite players and clubs when you were growing up?
Growing up as a soccer fan, Arsenal. I was always a big Arsenal fan, and Thierry Henry was always one of my idols growing up. But then in Ireland as well, Robbie Keane, he was a striker. See, I was always a striker from as far back as I could remember, forward. So I always kind of idolized those forwards. You scored goals, you know?
For sure. It's always more exciting to watch the goal scorers, for sure.
It is. No one grows up wanting to be a right back or a defender, you know?
Exactly. What are some of your main motivations to become a professional football player?
It's very hard, I think, to find a career that they don't really come about that often. Like, find a career that ends up doing something that you really love. You know what I mean? It's really rare that you can wake up every day and your job is to learn to go out and play soccer. Like, and I think footballers often probably take it for granted then as well.
Absolutely. There's so many kids out there dreaming to, you know, be a professional football player one day.
I know. And then once you get there, then it just seems kind of, you know, you end up taking it for granted. But it really is unique. And I try to remember something, try to be grateful that I had that opportunity to, you know, to get to have this as my career. And I'm going to probably try and prolong it now for as long as I can. But I think, as you said, nearly every kid grows up wanting to be a professional soccer player or a professional hockey player or whatever it is. It's a perfect kind of situation, but it's obviously a lot more difficult and you need a lot of luck to be able to get there as well.
Work and skill as well.
A lot of hard work and skill. I the way I look at that is there is a lot of, I see it a little more as luck. You know, even based on genetic luck and the genetic lottery and how you're born with whatever, you know, there's a certain amount of gift and talent that you're born with. And then obviously you can combine that with a bit of work ethic. But there's so many kids that have worked probably harder than me and haven't been fortunate enough to get a career in soccer. So I am grateful, but it's a fantastic, it's a great job. It's a really great job to have, you know.
So you currently play for Rotherham. And what is it like playing professional football in such a big football market like the UK?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Everything in this city, it all evolves around the football club. It's strange. Like the mood in the city is kind of reflected upon the result of the team at the weekend. Everyone, your butcher or your barber, everyone talks about football all the time over here. I know it's in Yorkshire as well, which is a really kind of historic football area in Northern England. So it's really cool. It's cool to be a part of, to see in such an area that's kind of football mad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can't imagine. Over here, like, it's more of a, we're hockey people in Canada.
Right.
I'm still a football fan. So I was born in Ukraine. So I still have the little bit of the European heritage. I watch football, but here, if you go to the bar, it's hard to get them to put on a football game. Plus the time difference, usually we get the football games like earlier in the daytime when everyone's working.
Yeah. It makes it harder to follow the leagues or the English leagues, I imagine, stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. And our leagues are not quite as competitive or exciting to watch. Still good football, but
good. Yeah. And them leagues are progressing really well.
Yeah. Aren't they? Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely getting better now. The women's leagues are definitely getting much better, but the men's are as well. And it's growing in popularity too, especially in Canada. We have a lot of immigrants, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's mostly like the second generation immigrants, like all their kids and stuff are getting into it.
Ah, okay. Right. Nice.
So what's your favorite part of playing professional football?
Oh,
it's a tough question.
It's a tough question. Yeah. Probably just the fact that your job is you're literally going out to a field and playing every single day. Like, you know, compared to other jobs, I actually can't even, some days I try to remind myself that there's people going to offices from, you know, my friends are in office from 7 in the morning to maybe 7 at night, like working in finance. Mm. And I'm thinking, God, you know, I don't know how I'm ever going to end up trying to transition to that kind of a life. But just the lifestyle and being able to do something that you, that's so enjoyable is a real gift, like, you know.
Oh yeah, I can only imagine. It's doing something you love. It's definitely everybody's goal in life. You got to love your job, I feel, in order to enjoy your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What are some of your future like goals and aspirations, both in football or just in general?
My plan. I've just signed a 3.5-year deal here with Rotherham about a month ago. So. Mm. My plan is to try and kind of get embedded in this team and you know, make my way into a starter lineup, hopefully over the next 6 months or to the year. And just try and enjoy myself and enjoy my football now for the next few years and see where it takes me. You know what I mean? Try to be grateful for this opportunity, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You were the leading scorer and the top player on your team last year. What does that accomplishment mean to you?
Yeah, it was in the league. Actually, it was the top goal scorer in the league and the league player of the year, which was a bit mad. So it was Irish player of the year, which I didn't. Something, if you had asked me at the start of the year, oh, you know, do you think you could win the player of the year? I would have laughed. Like, I would have said, not a chance. So to end up having the season that I had, and to win that award, it was a really special award for me to win. You can look at some of the names on it. And like the full of Irish international footballers, like who've previously won the award. It was so it was a real special thing, a special night for me and my family. Like a night that I probably won't forget, you know, for the rest of my life. And as you say, I'll mention luck, but you have to have a certain amount of luck to be able to win that award and have such a good year. But yeah, I was absolutely delighted. It was a huge, huge honor. Yeah.
So you used to play for the Bohemians. Now you're a member of Rotherham United. How is the team chemistry between the two teams?
There's a little bit of similarities. Obviously, it's different countries, different leagues. That you'll have differences. But both kind of the way that both managers are kind of a little bit kind of energetic, kind of talkative and outward, which is a funny little coincidence, but yeah, both kind of energetic, powerful teams that kind of play the same way, and that's probably why the move suited me, because of the styles were a little bit the same. They play kind of long, direct. I'm kind of a tall, awkward center forward, so they kind of play long, direct, and that suits my game. That's probably part of the reason why I came here as well, you know.
Makes sense. Was there any challenges with the transition?
Not so far. There has been. I've been injured. I've picked up an injury about a month ago. I'm just kind of getting up to speed now. Obviously, kind of the difference in tempo and intensity, kind of probably, and just the whole move and different things. But yeah, I ended up picking up an injury, which isn't ideal. But yeah, hopefully I'm on the mend now, so it's not a big issue.
Makes sense. Was it difficult to fit into a new team dynamic, or just generally a fluent trade?
Yeah, you get used to it as well. Like, this is probably my third or fourth dressing room. Like, that's another really good life skill that footballers end up picking up, is you'd be able to come into new environments. Like, at 18 or 19 years old, I signed for Dundalk, and I was, you know, thrown into an environment full of men, like, and I didn't know anyone. And like, you pick up and you learn a lot from that, you know what I mean? How to mix and mingle with people and adapt to changing rooms. There's loads of different dynamics within changing rooms and different groups and people and lives. It's interesting, like, but as you go on from club to club, you kind of get better in understanding, understanding that little, them little culture changes between teams and stuff. But no, it's been fine for me. I've mastered it now.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's definitely a skill that takes, I guess, you get used to it the more you shift between teams, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and another good life skill is to be able to adapt and be emotionally intelligent around people and stuff. That'll be transferable as well, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, adaptability is important. I feel not just in sports and in any industry. Yeah. To be able to be adaptable is pretty good skill to have.
It is, yeah, definitely.
So you guys are playing a championship game this Sunday against Sutton United. Any thoughts, feelings on that?
Yeah, that's a big game. It's a cup final in Wembley. So it'll be my first kind of experience in Wembley Stadium in London. Really cool. It'll be nice. It's the Football League Trophy, is what it's called over here. Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be a good crowd there. Obviously, I hope we win. I think we will, hopefully. But yeah, some players go their whole career, top players, without getting a chance to play in Wembley, because it's kind of unique. You kind of have to get to a cup final, you know, or a playoff final or something. So I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, and it'll be a really cool experience. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Wembley's definitely, it's a global stadium. I mean, you got like Queens played there, like the greatest bands, yeah. The greatest athletes.
A lot of history.
Yeah, it's got a hell of a lot of history, that's for sure. Do you have any preparation ritual for big games like this Sunday?
Not really. No, I would have my own little pre-game kind of little techniques or little warm-up stretching routines or band work. But I wouldn't be superstitious, really. I wouldn't be, you know, putting one sock. Some lads are incredibly superstitious. It would blow your mind. But I wouldn't have any little weird little idiosyncrasies. Definitely not. No, thank God. Having to remember them all would be a nightmare.
You know? I can only imagine, though. Like, from skateboarding, I know a couple of my skateboarder buddies also. It's like, before you have to try a trick, you got to like tap the stairs like three times, do all this weird stuff. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, no, but to each his own, right? Everyone's got their own superstitions or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, you do you, kind of, yeah.
Exactly.
How was it balancing your education with being a professional player?
Yeah, tricky at times, but it is doable. Soccer, you know, you can only train for so many hours a day, you know, and then you do have that kind of that downtime and that that free time as a soccer player. I'm being on trips or when you're traveling, we do quite a bit of traveling here as well because you have that many games. But as long as you kind of be proactive with it and stay on top of things, it's definitely doable. There definitely was periods that are tougher to manage than others. Like last summer, for example, I was in the middle of a semester, and we went on a really good run in Europe, in the Europa League. And I didn't expect for us to qualify through three rounds of Europe. I found myself sitting over in Greece, trying to submit an assignment an hour before our game against PAOK in the middle of Greece. Like, so that kind of them kind of things that you can't really plan for, but you can get through it. You can get through it. It's that kind of thing you can manage.
So what advice would you give to like young and aspiring football players who are trying to balance athletics and education?
Yeah, it's tough. There's no silver bullet. It's not easy. And there's times, the important thing is that I learned early on was like to manage the peak, be prepared. There's going to be a period where you become overloaded and you become overrun and you'll be trying to submit an assignment. You have exams, you have a game the next day and you're a little bit all over the place. But if you can deal with them kind of little peak moments, and the rest kind of flows a little bit more smoothly. But there's definitely no silver bullet. It's not easy, but you get through it. Yeah.
I guess, the further you go, you learn to manage your time a little bit better and find the right balance, I guess.
You know, you pick up a lot of little life skills that will probably stick to you then down the road. You know what I mean? Trying to balance both physical and that kind of mental side of things. So it's a good experience.
For sure. I'm sure your time management skills are pretty damn good.
Every hour of the day has to be used, yeah.
Absolutely.
You have a master's in science in renewable energy and environmental finance. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, I started that master's at the end of last year. At the start of last year, so probably this time last year. And I'm in my final semester now. So I'm coming up now to the end of it.
Nice. Congratulations.
Hopefully graduate now in a couple of months. But it's a really interesting master's. It's really unique with a focus on renewable energy. I think it's actually one of the only specific masters in Europe that focuses solely on environmental finance and that mix between that and renewable energy. So that's why it caught my eye. The lecture or the course lead there, it has the style and the substance that he's built around the course is fantastic. His name's Andreas Hopner. He's a real expert in that field, and that just straight away stood out to me, and it's something that I kind of was reasonably passionate about, renewable energy, and something that I could see myself working in. And in Ireland in particular, the way I see it was I was trying to look down the line for like post my soccer career, which industry do I want to be involved in. Mm-hmm. And the wind, the renewable energy in particular, the wind industry has huge potential in Ireland because
absolutely.
Of the offshore wind in particular. So there's huge scope for industry growth there. And that's kind of was my thinking around, when I was looking at which kind of masters do I want to get into, my rationale. But it's a fascinating area. It really is. And it's really broad. I was delighted kind of with my selection to jump into it,
Mm-hmm. So did you have both finance, economics courses and science courses as well?
Yeah, it mixes. It's like a mix of a little bit of everything. Yeah, with a little bit more of a focus on the finance side mm-hmm. of things, but then it delves into the science behind renewables and that kind of side of things as well. So, yeah, real fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds super interesting. I've never heard of specifically that program, but you were saying it's the only one in Europe, so that makes sense. It's
yeah, it's pretty niche. Yeah.
It's niche, but it's definitely a growing industry, and I could see a lot of potential there for growth.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll hope so.
Obviously, environmental sustainability, it's not often talked about in the context of sports. Is there any way you feel that athletes and clubs could increase their awareness of the issue or change some of their routines, practices to reduce their footprint or impact on the environment?
Yeah, there'll be loads of ways and initiatives that the clubs and any kind of sports organizations can be, can take different actions. Like the reach, people can underestimate the reach clubs, for football clubs, for example, the reach that they have. Like, fans are ridiculously tribal, as you probably see in this country.
Absolutely.
But, the attention that football clubs can absorb, and attention is so valuable now in the society that we live in, clubs need to be using that platform that they have to try and influence that broader society and the communities that they're in. They probably don't do enough at the minute, in regards to pushing sustainability, pushing sustainable practices. mm-hmm. be it themselves or be it even for their fans. Like one, something I seen recently there now is clubs should really try and be pushing more for to encourage fans to cycle the games. Even things like outside that aren't directly linked emissions to clubs or to organizations. But if you can impact even fans, what they're doing that evolves around the whole match day environment, or like there's loads of little things that can be done. And mm-hmm. I think clubs are starting to take heed and realizing that it's, you know, they need to address these issues. But there's definitely a lot that can be done. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like we're slowly moving towards like clubs being more socially conscious, and we are moving in the right direction. I totally agree with you. But is there any like specific behaviors you could think of that would, you know, help?
One, for example, and I'll take Rotherham, our club, for example. The owner probably won't like me saying this, but like we should have solar panels on our stadium roofs. We should. Like there's no real excuse. We're not in the level of UV radiation that we can get where we're at, where we're located, is fine. It's economical. It makes economical sense. Even in the environment that we're in at the minute with energy prices, it makes even more sense. I don't see why they don't push that way. You know, you could feed any excess energy back into the community. You could even use it as PR if they want, but that wouldn't even, you know.
It's not even necessary. That would just be a bonus kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's like clubs are missing out on that. Even the role governments could play there. Like, I feel like I haven't seen it anywhere, and I haven't looked worldwide, but between UK and Ireland in particular, the governments could, and they don't at the minute, but there could be some sort of scheme to invest and help clubs, stadiums, to make sure that rooftops is used for solar. Like solar is going to be hugely important here, this part of the world, mm-hmm. because it supplements wind. Wind energy is going to be our main source of electricity in the next 10, 20 years because of the wind capacity that we have. And solar supplements wind really well because they're how they interchange or whatever on the grid. Mm-hmm. That investment needs to be put out. I know money's obviously going to be tight in government, different policies, but something that could happen, and I think probably will now, is, you know, government organizations working with clubs, working with leagues, even league boards, say the FA, the Football Association in England, to set up funding projects where can we put solar into these communities. That's perfect. You have high quality stadiums throughout the country, like, and can the rooftops all be used? That's just something that could be implemented, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. In Canada, obviously, we have like a hell of a lot of stadiums and land, so it's definitely something we can benefit from here as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
What do you feel are important everyday behaviors the average person can change to become more conscientious towards sustainability and reduce our own personal impact on the environment?
Yeah, at the minute, the big one is with energy prices and gasoline prices. It's huge. So I know it depends on your location and where you're living. I'm from rural Ireland, so I know all about people telling me to cycle, you know, and they don't realize that I live in the middle of nowhere, like where you can't cycle anywhere. But if you can walk to school, if you can cycle, people should really be looking to try and do it and reduce their demand for fuel. Mm-hmm. And then even simple things, you know, and I've noticed in a way that recycling gets a huge, like everyone's on about trying to recycle bottles, but reduce, reuse, recycle. People kind of forget about the reduce and the reuse, and it's all this focus on recycling. Like we should be more focused on, because recycling has its own issues in regards to even the emissions from recycling and overflowing plants. And mm-hmm. we should be trying to focus on reducing our consumption, you know, reducing, I have a water bottle here, but reducing the, you know, use our own water bottles, fill up our bottles. Simple little things like that, coffee cups, reusable coffee cups, like these little actions. And that's where clubs can step in and play a role and set up these little initiatives and you know, and promote it through their social medias. That can move the needle then for little individuals, and these actions can carry over, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The impact that they have. So it's little small things like that can go a long way. Like,
no, for sure. If like a million people have this little small change in their behavior, it makes a huge difference. And I totally agree with you. This like consistent, like just plastic recyclable water bottles. It's definitely not necessary. Like if everybody had their own refillable water bottle, it would reduce the amount of plastic substantially.
Absolutely, yeah. Huge difference. Like,
now let's talk about sponsors a little bit, because I guess that is what our company works with. So what do you think the role of sponsors is for professional athletes, and how have sponsors played a role in your career?
Yeah, sponsors, that connection they can have with athletes, it allows athletes, I think, to express you know, their identity and their essentially their beliefs. I know it depends on the athlete, but that relationship is really important between the two, and it can show to athletes following or whatever. It shows essentially what they're passionate about. You know what I mean? And in regards to who they partner with. So sponsorships and partnerships have a huge role in sport. And even now at the minute with Ukraine, mm-hmm. it shows the power of sport and all across the world, you know, that and the range, you know, the range that sport has, no matter where you are. So
yeah, it really unifies people. And
It does. And sponsors can see that and see the power that sport has for communities all around the world, and how it can unite, you know, together for certain causes. Really, really important, yeah, that connection and that linkage, yeah.
So what brands are you interested in working with in the near future?
I suppose that it all depends if they're willing to work with me. I would, there's an important thing for me, obviously, with my degree and my focus on, you know, on renewables and climate change, would be sustainability, you know, and companies who are, you know, proactively, say a company who have to have kind of a goal, a net zero goal, be it 2030 or 2050, would be kind of an important little caveat for me. And companies that's shown that they are, you know, focusing with a focus or some sort of an element of sustainability built mm-hmm. within their brand. Patagonia is a brand that I have huge admiration for. That clothing brand, they're fantastic.
They make fantastic clothes too. Great quality.
they that's a real bonus. But how that company's run, I think, mm-hmm. is unbelievable. They hit the nail on the head on so many different aspects when it comes to sustainability and awareness and different things. Fantastic company. But there's loads of brands like that out there. Even in particular now in Ireland and stuff, there's loads of new kind of electric bike brands and electric scooter brands that I would probably love to kind of get on board with. You know, that's going to be a huge part of our transition now towards, you know, net zero in the next 10, 20 years, is shifting away from fossil fuel cars towards kind of cleaner transport. So that's something, that's another area, yeah, that I'd be passionate enough about.
Yeah, the electric scooters are definitely a big business, and they're getting pretty popular around here as well. Obviously, we get winter for like 6 months, so in the winter they kind of disappear, but in the summer there's a bunch of companies that just leave them all around the city, and they're like it's like a bike rental kind of thing. So you just download an app, and then you find a scooter. It like tells you where it is on a GPS. And then it's just connected to your credit card, and then you just rent one and then leave it wherever, and then pretty much say you're done your ride, and then somebody else can grab it from there.
Yeah, it's they're in Ireland as well. There's a recent company in Ireland. I know the founder. It's called Zip Mobility, mm-hmm. where they have the exact same kind of process now, and they're just launching throughout the UK. I think in Ireland at the minute the laws are preventing, I think they're due to change, but the laws prevent them. They're not legal on roads in Ireland.
Oh.
Scooters. Yeah, so that's kind of holding that industry back. But that, hopefully, I think that there's planned change. There's legislative change coming in. But one of them companies is called Zip Mobility. It's a really cool company that are just getting started now in Ireland. But as you say, yeah, that idea is really powerful, isn't it? Yeah, in cities.
Absolutely. And it's way, first of all, it's great for the environment, but it's also just practical, because like in downtown, there's nowhere to park and like everything like that. So it's saving people time and saving the environment all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Two birds with one stone.
Exactly. So earlier you were saying Patagonia had a really good business model. Could you tell me about that a little bit?
Just in regards to, you know, the materials they source, and your ability to trace the carbon impact of each, say each jacket or each t-shirt or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
And then combine that with the most important thing that they have, and a lot of other companies could really, it would be great if it caught on, was your ability to recycle your clothing. So say, for example, you've had your top for 2 or 3 years and it's extremely worn, or there's a little mm-hmm. whatever, you can send that back to Patagonia and they'll send you out a brand new one. Since it's how they recycle. So they have this like lifetime guarantee upcycling kind of system going, which is, you know, incredible. And that's kind of what you need, that kind of reuse and reusing products to reduce that kind of waste and essentially reduce our consumption. You know, we don't need to continuously keep buying and buying.
That especially like these days you have brands like H&M and Zara where it's like you go and get just like fast, like fashion. A shirt that's just for to go out once, like it looks nice and then you throw it in the wash and it's done.
That's that fast fashion is incredibly harmful for the environment.
Absolutely.
And on that spectrum, Patagonia is probably at the other end, you know, where they're the opposite to that kind of buy and that you don't keep buying and buying and buying every few months. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's, there's another actual, it's a company, it's called Fresh Cuts Clothing. It's a Dublin company, which are kind of taking that business model of Patagonia in regards to sustainability and clothing and that kind of line. It's another really cool company as well, just to give them a shout out from Dublin. But that model of Patagonia, I think will catch on now with more and more companies. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, consumers are actively, especially young consumers, they're being more and more conscious of the, you know, the impact companies are having now on the environment in particular. Like, so it's
absolutely the new generation is definitely a lot more conscientious of the impact of the environment and all the behaviors and all their habits.
Absolutely. Even in regards to working for companies, you know, I know loads of my friends now only want to work for companies that have a good reputation, or, you know, that have a good rep, you know what I mean? And that are progressive in a way, you know?
Yeah. They're socially responsible companies that
exactly.
Like the whole like corporate social responsibility, like theory and everything is definitely like blown up a lot, even in like business classes, which before corporations were not worried about, social responsibility very much.
No, or environmental.
Or environmental sustainability or anything. Yeah. They were just worried about the money. So it's nice that we're shifting to a more, civil and educated society in that sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
So then I just have one last question for you. How do you feel that Sport Endorse is a helpful platform for athletes?
I do. I think it's actually a really good idea. You know, it creates that kind of little middleman kind of role between athletes and brands. And the platform, essentially the idea of creating awareness around or creating that connection between brands and athletes is really important. And there was a huge gap there, I felt, in the market before I came across Sport Endorse. So I think it's a fantastic company and a fantastic idea. Because it's mutually beneficial to both parties, you know what I mean? Yeah. They're helping the athlete and they're helping the brand, you know what I mean? So it's a perfect kind of symbiotic relationship between both. I think it's a great company and a great idea, and I'll absolutely be recommending it to fellow players and stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time this evening. We wish you all the best from Sport Endorse, and we're looking forward to another great season of football from you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me on the Sit Down. For the listeners out there, I hope you've learned a bit about what it takes to become a professional footballer, as well a little bit more about environmental sustainability and how we can all do our part to save the planet. Georgie Kelly has been our guest today, and to all the listeners, you can follow his career and journey on Instagram at Georgie_Kelly_. To all the sponsors out there, Georgie is available for partnerships and sponsorships on the Sport Endorse platform. So get your inquiries out to us via social media or through our website. Remember to like, share, and comment this podcast.